I really like working with people, especially the little people. So that's how I entered nursing. Then when I was working in a pediatric ICU for 3-4 years, I realized what I really want to do is research, because there are so many unanswered questions. I would ask, why are we doing this? What evidence do we have to do this? Can we do something better? But when we do something better, is it really better? So that triggered me to get my PhD at University of California, San Francisco. It started my journey as a nurse scientist.
Welcome to A Nurse First. This is Julin Chen, telling her own A Nurse First story.
Always, I always wonder, why are we doing this? Is there any evidence to show us something should be done this way, or why is something not working? For example, talk a lot about social determinant of health, which is a broader term about things you can control or not control. You're in the context of somebody's life, which includes culture. My work has always related to the health of pediatric population as well as their family. I'm very into use of technology to improve the health services as well as parenting skill among parents of, you know, children with different age group. Clinically, I'm trying to be acute care provider. I work at ICU, right? That's my clinical training. So when I entered the PhD, I would think about pain management, especially in ICU. Many kids are sedated, right? Or unconscious. How do I help them to feel more comfortable, right? In a stressful time. When I try to figure out my research, then I came across an article that's back in early 2000, that just started the wave of recognition of obesity. Then I thought, what is we can do to prevent things happen not when they are in ICU? Then I switched my topic. I'm very much interested in public health issue, which is not, nurses has a lot to do, we can work on. Then I work with some provider and they all tell me about, they've been seeing kids, the Chinese American immigrant kids are getting bigger and they're worried, but they don't, it's just a hunch, right? There's no data evidence out there to show them that. That's how it triggers me, my idea about, let me look into this. It's really my partnerships with my clinical partners to figure out what are the most clinically relevant questions that I can engage in solving and understanding. And as an immigrant, I'm really interested in immigrants' experience and their health outcome. So this is really how I got started to move my acute care background to very much a public health nursing background. Because I had to do a different review of literature and there was not much out there. But I also have like the hunch of feeling that something's there. It's just nobody studied that. That's the science, right? There's not much out there, but I know that somebody must be able to produce some evidence for me to see. So that's how I decided to be. I'm going to be the one providing evidence for other people to see, because there wasn't much out there at that point of time. Well, the evidence was really try to look at the other country, right? You can see it's when U.S. not much data here, you look at other country, and you also look at the adult population, right? What do we see in adults? So you see the pediatric tend to follow the adult, right, trajectory. So you see the adult here, you see the surge. My hypothesis is that you probably see a surge in pediatric population because the family, right? You probably will see the same pattern. So that's sort of how it came about, is to look at what we know from other countries. Did they start seeing that? As well as the adult population, do we see a surge? Then use as hypothesis, if you see a surge in adult, will we see the same pattern in pediatric population? My own background coming from Taiwan, I learned a lot from sort of understand both culture and go between the cultures. So this, I feel like I can be a good global citizen and really bring nursing and science to the global community.
Julin is the first nurse scientist in the United States to specialize in the prevention of childhood obesity in Asian immigrants. For her groundbreaking research, Sigma inducted Julin into the 2023 International Nurse Researcher Hall of Fame.
I'm very proud to be the first one, and I have seen others start doing the work focused on the immigrant population as well. I feel that I'm able to contribute something very different and significantly in immigrant health. The challenge for establishing my program research is, you know, in the area of obesity, you know, specifically, you know, Chinese immigrant. The challenge is to increase awareness and use all the data points to demonstrate why this is the issue in this particular population, as this is contradictory to what people think. Many people have the perception that Chinese are always little tiny people, right? So the point of trying to educate, even reviewer. But I have the great support from my colleague in clinical setting where they provide lots of care to the immigrant. They themselves told me they have seen a surge of the obesity, they just don't know what to do. I'm actually very grateful for my advisor at that point, PhD advisor, now is the dean at Rush University, Dr. Christine Kennedy. She's the one empowered me, said, go for it. That's how the science breaks through. Somebody had to start with something that we don't know, right? Because if without the person to start something, you're never going to move forward. So she encouraged me to realize this is a good idea. And that's what the science is about, to study the unknown. When I started my journey as a nurse scientist focused on obesity in Chinese American children, I learned the prevalence is not very different than, they say, the typical European American wife. However, the study also demonstrated that if you do a body scanning, use MRI, that's the best way to know the real distribution of fat, because it matters. The way we quantify obesity, at least at US, is using formula, try to use all the kids we have, regardless of the ethnicity, put it all together, then smooth the curve. So you have the bell curve, right? 95% you're obese, right? Under 5% you are underweight, as a weight. But think about the kids in the US, this huge variation, right, of us kids in there. So you're using everybody to curve the bell, which, you know, plus or minus in the population-based study, they look like it's normal, right? It looks fine. But the study also showed that if you put the kids like the same age, gender, it matters. The same age and gender. Age really matters in terms of how you look at the percentage of body weight. And the study showed that put the same age, gender, and the BMI of a child. They group them in typical European white, African American, and Asian Chinese. Through the scanning, they realized with the same BMI, the same body structure, compared to white, the Asian, the Chinese American, has 1% more body fat than their European white. So 1% actually you think is not significant, but it is significant in terms of body fat distribution. On the other hand, the African American has 1% less body fat, even with the same body structure. So we know we're not built the same, and we're not genetically, we're not built the same. So because of that, then we know that if you look at the WHO recommendation, the cutoff for adult is different in terms of BMI as overweight and obesity. For Asian, they typically have lower cutoff. A study really showed with lower BMI, you really increase the risk for cardiovascular disease and cancer, as an example. So you will see that how we quantify, classify United States kids based on the bell curve, right, can be misleading. 10 minutes ago, I just read a CDC report coming out about the increased prevalence of severe obesity among young children, age 2 to 4 years old. And in the report, it say that 20 states see a surge of increased severe obesity among those young children, which is a red flag, right? You think about children to age 2 to 4. Imagine if they're obese at their age, severe obese, the likelihood of them be obese in teenager, in adult, is very high. And imagine that your body has to take all those, there's a burden from obesity for longer, for the young age, until you grow up, right? So that's increased your risk for cancer, diabetes, and other conditions significantly compared to kids who have not experienced obesity in their life. So the challenge is sort of the population base is to increase the awareness, as well as now have to think about the culturally, how do you tell parents, right? As we know, providing food, comfort food, is a sign of love, right? There's many cultures, not just Chinese, right? It's a sign of love. What do we do in Christmas holiday? What do we do in Thanksgiving? We eat, right? What do you do at party? We eat. That's part of, we share love. And not to say take that away, it's consciously how do you eat and balance it. And also that the way you gain weight is not overnight either. So those kind of perspective as not working is with the family, it's the family intervention, not the child intervention. I think the challenge is to really understand culturally, right? Even though I grew up in Taiwan, but I've been here for so long, so this different perspective. And also perspective on the parents, right? What they see as the way they should engage and can engage intervention that to help to promote, we call healthy weight management, not just weight loss. I always say it's healthy weight management to help you to reduce risk for other potential conditions down the road. So it's the environment, not only genetic, but environment where we create unhealthy, we call obesogenic environment, which is the environment we create, promote obesity. So what I learned is that, especially immigrant, when you have this stress as a new immigrant, right? But there are lots of things the family experience in the transitional immigrant to a country, right? Assimilation. As we know that stress also tied to increased uptake of food, which is a normal body mechanism to protect oneself. So coupled with not understand the new environment, right? The old stress for not just the child, but the parents, the family, experiencing in the immigration processes. So that's why I'm really interested in understanding not just healthy food and to be active. It's not simple as just go eat and just go move, right? It's a lot to do with their life. And how so many of my program has a significant component about stress management. And even for the parents, now life is stressful. Living in the new environment is stressful. Try to raise a kid in a different culture is even more stressful. There are going to be conflict between you and the child, not just not normal conflict, but additional cultural conflict, right? So my work has a significant component. They say help mindful eating and mindful activity to help parents and kids to reduce stress. Well, I always tell the parents, and even in my research, right? It's not about you not eating right. It's not about you not going to exercise, right? It's not just you. It's where we live. And by behavior model is that when you're hungry, what do you do? When you're stressed, what do, right? So because this body mechanism typically trigger when you're stressed. They make people go just eat, right? It's a protection mechanism when you're stressed. So the biobehavior mechanism that we try to do is try to, just like cognitive behavior therapy, you have to recognize, are you hungry, truly hungry, or are you stressed? Because once you know you recognize your actually what your body tell you and your brain tell you, you can then reverse that. I have the urge to eat. It's not because I'm hungry. I have urge because I'm stressed. So you have to then flip around and say, what can I do? It's not I'm hungry, right? It's I'm stressed. So the biobehavior is really try to recognize the sign that what the body tried to tell you and use the cognitive ability to really tell yourself, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Also that we learn how long it takes for the brain to recognize I'm full and the speed of eating. So we really encourage family meal, meaning you chat and talk and eat. You slow down the eating process to allow the signal from the stomach go to the brain. So obesity itself is an issue, but not many times it's not the only issue that a person experiences, a child experiences, a family experiences. Obesity, I feel, is a sign symptom of a condition. It is the diagnostic criteria now as a disease, but it is truly a sign symptom of something else that makes the person this. It could be genetically, could be environmentally, right? The thing we should do is prevent it happen. Prevention is much better than intervention. So I think the most challenging part is how can we prevent that happen, start early, building a healthy, happy environment for this population. So the country, the entire population can be healthy and happy.
Did being the first to specialize in this area of research present you with some unique challenges? How have you navigated those?
So the roadblock, I think, early is trying to convince people that this is a significant public health issue in a very unique population. Many people don't see it as an issue. If this is not your big population, major population, why should we care? But I think every population matters here. Even well, just 1% of the population. If 1% was not well, the 99% probably would not do too well either. The first person is always difficult to do it because the first person have to stand up to do it right. But once you start doing that, you have a follower, you have two. Then you will have your program research. And it matters. I would say resilience is the key here. You just have to follow your passion. You have abundant opportunity in front of you in a profession. Not only can be a great clinical nurse, you can be an educator, you can be a frontier scientist. There are so many pathways for everybody in nursing. You just have to find your path. And you can detour your path. You can integrate those paths together. I integrate my clinical and my research and my love for education. And I feel that our ability, given the scientific knowledge we have and caring purpose of, you know, the purpose of my work is really provide humanistic care, right? And I think that I feel very honored to be part of the journey.
Thank you for listening to A Nurse First from Sigma. If you loved this episode, do us a favor and subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. It is very much appreciated. For more information about A Nurse First and Sigma, visit sigmanursing.org. Until next time.